Today's episode of Hollinger & Duncan is brought to you by rockauto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Welcome on to Hollinger & Duncan's first annual playoff extravaganza. Going to take a little bit of a different approach here. Instead of doing the whole series by series thing, what we're going to do is talk about just a bunch of categories that we came up with here. The most interesting series, the individual player matchups that we're most interested in seeing, and the best coaching matchup, a bunch of stuff like that to take a little bit different of an approach at looking ahead to the playoffs. But first, John, do you want to debate who would have made a Rising Stars game for the bubble if there were one?
Well, if it weren't for the assistant coaches, man, I'm glad they didn't go that far. I thought doing an all-bubble team was cool. It's kind of like having the all-tournament teams at the Olympics or at a FIBA tournament, so I thought that was appropriate. But when you start getting into the all-rookie stuff, because especially like the second teams, when people are debating about second-team all-rookie, I can't believe you didn't take Eric Paschal over Cody Martin. Just shut up. No, nobody cares.
Other than team PR departments.
Yes, exactly.
Player agents, of course. So let's start here. This is a pretty simple one. We'll do some overall playoff predictions here at the end. I know you wrote a couple of pieces for The Athletic with your playoff predictions. I intentionally did not read those yet, so your opinions, it will be new to me. Mm-hmm. So
Nate intentionally doesn't read my other stuff either. But
oh, that is if there is anyone on earth that you cannot say that to, that's me. I've been reading your shit since 2002.
Thank you.
I purchased books. How many of those were you selling,
by the way? How many people that I was not related to actually purchased my books? Yes, that's the real, like, if you're hardcore, like if you're into the band before they were cool, like that's like your proof. If you bought the prospectus books that I wrote.
Yeah, I was reading alleyoop.com in the summer of 2002. I was living in Hilton Head, South Carolina.
Wow.
Working as a waiter for a summer after college before I was going to go to law school. And fun times.
Yeah, those were fun times.
So let's get back to business here. The most interesting series to you?
Most interesting series to me is Houston, Oklahoma City, especially with Russell Westbrook missing most or all of it due to his quad strain. Houston's kind of slow rolling, saying, well, he'll miss a couple games. Usually when they start out that way, you're not going to see the guy.
It's very Kevin Durant from last year type of feeling to it, isn't it?
Yeah. To use one example. So I think that really makes it, I think a couple things make it interesting. One, obviously no Westbrook. Now all of a sudden you're talking about starting Ben McLemore or Eric Gordon or somebody. Eric Gordon's been horrible. Then Oklahoma City fully healthy. I've always maintained, we've disagreed on this, I think they're kind of interesting playoff wise because they have exactly five good players. They can put those five good players on the court at the same time against Houston, which they can't do against some other teams. And a lot of these minutes that they played with their bench guys, which add up to kind of a lot, just aren't going to be there in this series. You're not going to see, you know, Nader Muscala lineups in this playoff series. So I think Oklahoma City could still go up a level.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought. Now, Dennis Schroeder has been away from the team. We'll see what kind of shape he's in coming back after the birth of a child. He then had to quarantine when you theoretically can't really do much. I'm sure they probably just gave him like a treadmill in his hotel room or something. So he may take a little bit to round into form. How do you see them defending Harden in that series?
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously the most interesting challenge. They'll start games with Lugans Dortmund on him. I think
if he's available, he's got that knee sprain, so he might be questionable.
That could be an issue just because they're so thin that if he's not able to go, that creates problems for them. I mean, they were playing Terrence Ferguson earlier in the year, and he's like all the way out in the rotation. Like even in the games where they were letting everybody play, he hardly played. I wonder in fourth quarters if they're going to put Chris Paul on him.
Yeah, that's interesting. But ultimately, to me, it doesn't really matter because what Houston is going to do is they're going to find whoever the weakest defender is, and they're going to have him screen for Harden. And then the question becomes, how do you deal with that? Or I actually predict that we're going to see just the straight-up double team of Harden without there even necessarily being a screen.
right.
set a lot in this series, because I don't think they have a great individual matchup, and they certainly don't have a great 1-5 matchup when they're just going to set that small man pick and roll and try to get hard in the matchup.
Yeah. So the game within the game, I think, for Oklahoma City is keeping Gallinari and Steven Adams on the floor. Because if they do
there's nowhere for them to go. There's no one to replace them. They are
they have to, right? But, you know, being able to have them defend competently enough that they're not toast out there. Houston has actually gone away from a lot of the pick and roll stuff, so it's going to be interesting to see how much they'll go to that versus just ISO Harden as we get into this. Because like you said, I mean, it does invite a double team when you do that.
So I really am interested to see what's going to happen on the other end.
When Oklahoma City has the ball?
Yeah, because is there anyone that you really love on OKC attacking a switch?
No, I think Steven Adams has to pound the crap out of him. I mean, actually, Gallinari is good against switches.
Yeah, he's the guy, I think.
He's unique because he can attack bigger or smaller switches pretty effectively. He's underrated putting it on the floor and getting by bigger guys and drawing fouls. And then obviously he has that pull-up game that he can use as well. And he's pretty good on the block against small. So depending on who ends up checking him, that could be a potential advantage for OKC. And then I just think offensive rebounds and just mashing them with Steven Adams is their other way to profit.
Yeah, Danny and I talked a lot about this series today, but one thing I probably should have mentioned more is I think the team that just has better defensive discipline is going to be at a huge advantage. Can you just avoid fouling on bullshit?
Oh, my God. You know, I completely forgot what a tiresome series this is going to be between Harden and CP.
Well, Gallo, too, is another Gallo. One, right?
Yep. Yeah,
I mean, OKC, aren't they like number one in the NBA in free throw? They're like pretty close to the top if they're not. Yeah, let me see here. The Clippers are 1, Miami 2, OKC 3, Houston 4 over the course of the entire season. So, yeah, I think Gallo in particular, it just, and Chris Paul when they're in the bonus. Harden, it's a little harder because he's actually beating you first and then drawing the contact a lot of times. Like he's actually getting that contact out of an advantage that he has.
Harden has actually done a lot less bullshit in the last year or two than he did a few years ago.
Yeah, I agree with that. But Paul Gallinari, I mean, anytime Gallinari drives, he's just going to try and draw the foul.
Yeah. Now, one interesting thing, the Thunder is a team. Do not foul.
Yeah.
28th in opponent free throw rate per 100. Which puts them probably in a little better situation against a team like Houston.
Okay, we'll do our predictions here at the end.
What was your most interesting? Was it this series as well?
Oh, yes, it was this series also. Right. It might have been Utah-Denver if there weren't all these injuries and absences.
Yeah.
And same thing, it probably would have been Boston-Philly before the Ben Simmons injury. But those are were my three candidates.
Sure.
Least interesting series, non-Brooklyn Orlando division.
Right. So of the other six, what is the least interesting? I got to say, I think it might end up being a pretty decent series. I'm having a hard time getting excited about Denver, Utah. There's players missing and I don't know. They're not real. Like the best matchup, I guess, is between the centers, but it's not. I don't know. Am I wrong here? I'm just having a hard time with it.
Well, I think strategically it's going to be fascinating because both of these coaches just don't kind of really know what they have right now.
Exactly.
And we don't know whether Harris and Barton are going to play at this point. I mean, I saw them working out, some video of them working out before the game on Friday and seemed like they were moving around okay. So maybe we'll see them at some point, but you can't count on them to play big minutes right at the beginning. Conley, it came down today that, as was expected, he's going to have to leave the bubble. And his child was born today, but he'll, at a minimum, even if he comes back nearly immediately, he's going to have to miss 4 days with the quarantining, assuming he's able to get tested while he was gone. And so that's going to make things a little bit difficult. But I think strategically, I think this is going to be interesting. There's a lot of players. I'm always interested in just seeing players that I don't know that well in larger roles. So how they're going to react, Porter Jr. and some of these bench guys on the Jazz. To me, though, I think actually it's Portland Lakers is the least interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm, you know, I'm kind of a league pass dork. That's why I can't go against the Jazz and Denver, just because I think Portland just doesn't have the horses. I think that's going to be a short series. It's going to be just Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum trying to bomb away. But I just, Portland has so little chance of stopping these guys. But I will say this, other than those two series that we're probably not going to talk about too much, I think all six of the remaining ones really have something to recommend. Like, I don't think Portland LA is going to be a bad series. If you just force me to pick one, that would be it for me.
Yeah, exactly. So a lot of times, you know, in the first round, especially with all these games, you kind of curate your viewing maybe to eliminate the least interesting ones. So I don't see myself curating the Lakers Portland, at least until it's 2-0 or 3-0.
Compared to your typical 1-8, it's better.
Yeah, exactly.
And 2-7, I would say the same as well in the West.
Yeah, definitely.
You all know that I have had a wonderful partnership with Helix Sleep going back to 2015. So I can tell you that they are offering their best deal ever right now. Up to $200 off all mattress orders and two free dream pillows with every mattress order. Helix has comfort designed for everybody. I'm kind of a weird size and shape, 6'6", about 220, give or take. My wife is a lot smaller than me, but we were able to find a Helix Sleep mattress that worked for us with their proprietary sleep quiz. Only takes 2 minutes at that helixsleep.com/PER link. Easy to remember because John invented PER. Take that 2-minute sleep quiz. They'll match you to a customized mattress that will give you the best sleep of your life. If you want a soft, medium, or firm bed, you could be a side sleeper, a back sleeper, a stomach sleeper. You sleep too hot, you sleep too cold. Well, they have a mattress that will work for you regardless. They've been awarded the number one best overall mattress pick of 2020 by GQ, Wired Magazine, and now Apartment Therapy as well. Yet another accolade for Helix Sleep. The way to get started with them again and get that up to $200 off all mattress orders is helixsleep.com/PER, H-E-L-I-X, helixsleep.com/PER. Don't forget that /PER URL to let them know that you came from us. So much as it pains me, I have to admit that a big portion of this show's demographic is nerds. I consider myself a nerd. I've learned from one of the best, John Hollinger. I hope it's not news to John that he might also be a nerd. But that's right. This is a nerd safe zone here. And it is my duty to tell my fellow nerds about Masterclass. We all love learning a lot more. Masterclass on basically any subject you want to learn more about at this point is the best way to do it. You can learn from now as many as 80 masters if you want to. Chris Voss on the Art of Negotiation, David Sedaris on Humor and Personal Essays, Neil deGrasse Tyson, Scientific Thinking and Communication. If you want to learn how to write, how to play tennis, how to play basketball, Margaret Atwood, Serena Williams, Stephen Curry, amazing actors and actresses. Whatever your passion is, Masterclass probably has a class for you. And at masterclass.com/PR, you can get $30 off the first year of an annual subscription to Masterclass. That's masterclass.com/PER to claim your discount. 15% off, $30 off the annual all access pass at masterclass.com/PER. Okay. This one we can spend a lot of time on here. Individual player matchups you are most interested in seeing.
Okay. I'm going to go with TJ Warren against Jimmy Butler.
That was on my list as well.
The one game Indiana and Miami played where both teams really tried, Butler did a really good job on him. But Warren, I mean, Indiana needs him to score at a high rate to make that an interesting series. And it's really his first big test as a leading man offensively. So I'm excited for that part.
Quickly on that point, I went back and watched that game. I thought it was more, number one, I thought Warren had some pretty good looks in that game that he just didn't knock down. He ended up 5-14.
I would agree with that.
And also I thought it was really the switching defense and the mobility of Miami that caused a few more problems necessarily rather than Butler just like lock and trail on that pin down out of the corner for him. And I also thought that Indiana did an extremely poor job of trying to get Warren a good matchup against either Dragic or Duncan Robinson in that first game, that they're really, especially if Miami's going to be switching more with Bam at center, that they got to really make Miami pay for having those guys in their starting lineup.
Yeah, you almost wonder if it was a don't show them anything game, but by Indiana. Like, did they just go vanilla and not give them anything, and now they'll break out the real stuff in game one?
Yeah, they're going to go vanilla bean in game one. Those might be the only two things that Nate McMillan has at his disposal. I think he has disappointed me in the postseason, where you have to acknowledge he's been good in the regular season. But I thought that he, the 17 series and the 18 series against the Cavs in particular, I thought that they could have done a better job there. Mm-hmm. But all right. So anything more on that? Or do you have any other ones?
What about Caris LeVert against OG Anunoby?
Yeah, I put that Caris LeVert was going to feature prominently in another category that I had, which is star player with the toughest matchup.
Oh, okay.
And I mean, against the whole team. But do you think Anunoby guards LeVert?
Possibly not. They could match up a few different ways. Sure. Could be Kyle Lowry on him, I guess.
Van Vliet, maybe. Although I think Van Vliet's a good match for Joe Harris because he does so well tracking guys off the ball.
Yeah. So they could go a few different ways. To me, it's interesting though, just LeVert against that defense, because I think it's a really good test of like where is this guy really in the in the spectrum of offensive players. You know, is he really a guy to put the ball in his hands, or is the shooting too shaky, or the turnovers and whatnot? I mean, he's been good in the bubble games, but some of these games they played haven't been the highest of stakes. So I'm really interested in that test.
Yeah, definitely. And the thing too is that Toronto has so many guys that they can throw at him. I imagine they'll switch everything 1 through 4 with that, probably even 1 through 5 when the Nets go with a backup center, with like Quirks maybe a backup center, because they just don't have a traditional backup center. Maybe you'll even see Ibaka switching on to LeVert. And the Raptors are also just so good at providing help at the rim and then also closing out on shooters. You know, he's not going to have just that open lane against Hassan Whiteside like he did in that Portland matchup, right? Like he's going to be seeing a lot of bodies as he tries to navigate in, even if he is thinking that he has a decent individual matchup,
which,
you know, I don't see that either. I mean, that Toronto defense just has no holes in it. It is really,
really
impressive.
Solid, rock solid. Yep.
So here's one that I had, and this isn't necessarily guys at the same position, but Damian Lillard against Anthony Davis.
So you're saying when the Lakers switch and or when Portland switches?
Well, or if they go with a more conventional pick and roll defense as well. Because remember, going back to 2018, Lillard really got shut down in that series against the Pels. They got swept. That was a big pain point for him. He's played much better since then. But Anthony Davis playing at center, we'll see if the Lakers go to that or at the four as well. Mm-hmm. But whether it was moving his feet in pick and roll defense, trapping, or switching, I think if you're going to play a conventional style that doesn't involve just a straight switch, Anthony Davis might be the best big man in the league to go against Damian Lillard. Because we saw Lillard, he's just traffic coning these guys like Porzingis and Jared Allen in those last few games. He's not be able to do that against Anthony Davis, I would think.
Right.
So that'd be interesting. I mean, he's going to have a pretty tough task, I think, Lillard. Because to me, it's almost more about the big man in the pick and roll against Lillard than like who the actual defender is guarding him, because Nurkic is such a good screener. Lillard's so good at setting it up. Like, you can't just take him away with a drop coverage and one guy trying to get over the screen. Like, you got to involve the big man more than you would against most guys.
Yeah, absolutely. And then because the big man has to come out so high, when Dame makes that pocket pass, can Davis track back and get back in the play? I think he probably can. I think most other bigs cannot.
That's a great point there. Yeah. Any other ones that popped out to you?
I mean, Jokic against Gobert.
Yeah. I mean, definitely. This is because those two guys are going to be guarding each other. And the best defensive center against the best offensive center. I would say it right now. Maybe that's Karl Anthony Towns, but he will not be participating in these playoffs, sadly enough. So, I that's going to be awesome. I'm really looking forward to that one. How have you felt that Gobert has done against Jokic over the years?
You know, I haven't really monitored their matchups that closely. It did seem like Jokic got the better of it this year a little bit. I can't say that I've like studied their head to heads in a way that I have a strong opinion on it.
Yeah, I thought Jokic looked good in that double overtime crazy game that they played. It fouled Gobert out of the game. One thing I think is going to be huge is, you know, which of those guys gets into foul trouble.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, if Gobert in particular, if he gets fouls, I mean, that's a nightmare for Utah because of their depth situation. Denver probably has a little bit more optionality. I mean, Jeremy Grant's played pretty well. Plumlee, I think, is not that great for playoff basketball at this point, but certainly probably still better than anything Utah
has. I describe Plumlee as over-eager on both ends.
Point Plumlee, man. Come on.
This is another one that if you haven't been listening to as much of my content, he may be my least favorite player in the league aesthetically. His hook shots can cause some damage.
The ambitious post-ups, yes, are always humorous. Yeah.
And not only that, but this is something that I think a lot of people don't understand is if a big man posts up, you basically have to give him the ball. Because you can't do anything else now. Like, you can't run a pick and roll. He's not running out there to do that. You're going to try and drive. Maybe if they're fronting him, you can try and drive the front. But if you're the big man is standing there demanding the ball, like, he's kind of blocking you from doing anything else. So you have to give it to him.
Yep, exactly.
Okay, next one for me. Yeah, last thing I'll say actually on Jokic and Gobert. I do think that Jokic, to me, the weight that he's lost, he's not like jumping any better really, but I think his first step is a little bit better than it had been.
He's looked good.
Okay. Next one for me. Four Rockets who aren't James Harden against three Thunder who didn't just double team James Harden.
Yeah. I mean, presuming that Adams or Gallinari is one of the guys in the double team, can these other Oklahoma City players scoot around enough to close off the 3-point line or really close off the rim. You know, Houston's 3-point shooting is at a point where you almost live with it a lot of times.
That's certainly what the Bucks' philosophy was.
They take a lot of them, but they're not a devastating shooting team anymore. I think when they had Ryan Anderson and peak Eric Gordon, it was a little different. And now you're like, all right, Austin Rivers, like, fire away. Like, let's see what you got.
Jeff Green, PJ Tucker. I mean, if they're in the corner, I think it's a little different. But, and without Westbrook, like, what do you do behind the play? Let's say you double-team Harden at the point of attack. My personal thought is they're just going to send a second guy to it, almost play it kind of like it's a 2-3 zone. Mm-hmm. Where you just have two guards double-team Harden at the top, and then you've got your bigs still back to protect the rim rather than forcing your bigs, Gallinari and Adams, to like get way out on the floor on Harden. And that way you can kind of zone up behind the play a little bit easier. But what are you going to have those guys do behind the play?
Because usually they have Westbrook kind of slash to the free throw line and that creates a jailbreak, right? And who's the guy on Houston that you can trust to do that?
It's probably going to be Gordon at this point.
You probably would have said Eric Gordon a year ago, but if I'm OKC, I'm probably taking my chances with that until he proves to me that he can make the play.
Yeah.
These other guys, Jeff Green, PJ Tucker, Robert Covington, I mean, they're not playmakers. It's not what they do. Is it Austin Rivers? Again, I'll probably, if Austin Rivers getting 50 is the thing that beats me, like, I'm going for that, right?
Yeah, Rivers, I mean, granted he had the 41 in that mop-up game in the seeding games, but he at least can dribble.
Exactly. And
the more I think about it, if I were the Thunder, my thought would be, all right, we're going to stay on Eric Gordon when we double-team so that Harden can't throw it directly to him. We want to direct the ball to either Tucker or Robert Covington, who is pretty atrocious driving the ball, and maybe even Rivers will try to keep it out of his hands a little bit as well, because he at least can drive to the basket. He can dribble the ball. And then if you throw it right to Robert Covington, we're not going to guard him initially, but we're going to sprint over to him and just recklessly close him out. So he has to put the ball on the floor and drive and make a decision. And by that point, our guys who just went and double teamed, one of them will be able to get back into the play, and we're going to force Robert Covington or PJ Tucker off the dribble to make the decision. So those are the guys I'd be leaving open initially. And yeah, those guys can shoot that first shot, but then you just sprint at them, run them off the line, make them dribble inside the arc.
Yeah. And then, I mean, Houston, I'm assuming we'll have Covington in one corner and Tucker in the other, so that the first pass is likely to somebody else.
Yeah. So maybe you even make it almost like a three-man zone where you double team with two of the guards, and then the next guard is kind of just waiting around near the top of the key to see who the outlet is and go pick up that guy.
It's a triangle and two with both of the two on Harden, right? That's what it is.
I mean, I think you're probably right. I would consider that something like that in particular. And I'm sure they'll try to mix that up too, to where they don't just do it at half court. You just wait until Harden dribbles the air out of the ball. And then once he really starts to make his move, then you double team. Like, you can mix that up a lot. But yeah. I think if they single team him, I don't see anyone on their team who can stop him, particularly if they're just going to go screen and get the matchup anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
Any other matchups that you want to talk about?
I think there are a couple of them that I noted in some categories where we get further down here.
One more I was going to talk about is, actually, yeah, we can save that for later too. This one, these guys aren't probably going to be guarding each other, although I imagine the Clippers will try to get this matchup, but just Luka Doncic versus Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is what I had noted, that I had mentioned. Yeah. I mean, Luka's first playoff series, I think, is going to be challenging. If you look at the matchup, the Clippers can go small, switch everything, start a possession with Kawhi Leonard on Kristaps Porzingis, and then just switch Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. And like, okay, you're left with Porzingis posting up Paul George. Like, they'll live with that, right? So I think that's going to be really tough. I think you're right. I think they're going to put Kawhi on the guy who's going to be in the pick and roll, and so that they can get the switch and just switch everything. They'll start with George, and then, oh, thank God I got Paul George off me. Oh, now I have to deal with Kawhi Leonard. Great. You know? Yeah. So I think that is a brutal matchup for Luka in his first playoff series.
Yeah. I think Luka can actually do okay against some of these guys. I think he may, as you mentioned, end up having to ISO a little bit more necessarily than playing pick and roll, because they're definitely, I think if they start Zubac at center guarding Porzingis, you know, that could be a little bit of trouble. So, but then on the other end, I really want to see the stress test of Luka Doncic and Kristaps Porzingis. We haven't seen either of those guys in the playoffs. Porzingis protects the rim really well, but struggles in other facets defensively, as we saw in that 61 point game that Lillard had. And Luka, not a terrible defender, but he's also, they're going to try and wear him down, I think, by going at him. And he's going to have to guard a real player on this Clippers team, almost certainly. And particularly because I think they'll try to get the matchup against him, even if he doesn't start the possession on someone like George or Kawhi.
And then, because if you start Luka on Patrick Beverley, then what? You're having Seth Curry guard Paul George?
Yeah, tough question. Okay. We started hitting on this here. The star player with the toughest matchup, Luka and Caris LeVert, definitely in that. Anyone else come to mind for you who a star player is just, this is not the perfect matchup for them?
You know, I mentioned TJ Warren earlier.
But I mean, Miami's defense to me is really good.
They've just looked so rock solid in these bubble games. And the thing I was going to say is that it's not just TJ Warren, it's Oladipo and Brogdon, and anything they do in pick and roll, like Miami just switches it and puts Bam on the player dribbling, and there's just no advantage gained.
Yep. And I've talked about this a little bit too, and I think this might be the case for the Thunder as well, but if Miami is going to be switching, and maybe we're making a little too much of that, but I think we're going to see a reasonable amount of that, that Indiana is not a team where it's like, oh, we're going to make all these quick cuts and slips and get inside position for the roll man off the switch, or, you know, we're going to move the ball quickly to the other side when you try to load up against our ISO, against a matchup. Like, they, to me, don't have that institutional knowledge that, you know, a team like Golden State did going against a switching defense, where they're really able to get those, you know, 10 extra points a game where you force a miscommunication by really moving around and just being smarter than the other team. Like, that's just not their game, in my opinion.
No. And even to the extent they did that at all this year, it was mostly with like McDermott and Sabonis stuff, right? Which, I mean, I don't know how much McDermott even plays, and Sabonis obviously is out.
Yeah. And McDermott, I think, by the switching, can be taken away quite well. Chris Paul. I think Chris Paul actually, this is a very difficult matchup for him.
Really?
But I think you might disagree with me on that.
I think he against the switching defense, okay, I can understand that because it's not his standard snake the pick and roll, take the 15-foot pull-up. So I could see that. But I still think like some of these guys that Houston is inevitably going to have on him just aren't that good, right? Like, if he's trying to beat PJ Tucker every time, that's a problem. But, you know, is Robert Covington that great in isolation? Or Ben McLemore?
Is Chris Paul that great in isolation?
Is Chris Paul that great in isolation? Yeah. It might have to be more of a Shai Alexander or Dennis Schroeder series. I mean, Schroeder's usage rate was really high. Even when he played with the other guys.
I think Shai is the guy that I think can just blow by guys. Like some of the, in that Miami game, they only played really the first half,
mm-hmm.
but he was just getting right by guys. Like his change of pace hesitation, now that he can hit the three-pointer off the dribble, I think he could really show out in this series with a chance to get to the basket. And, you know, he's not an incredibly athletic finisher, but he's not going to let PJ Tucker draw a charge on him. He's going to be under control. He can use that scoop game. Houston doesn't really have anyone with the length to challenge him. So once he gets past the first guy, I think he can finish at the rim pretty well. And I also think you make a great point about Covington. I think Covington underrated as a help defender, overrated as an on-ball guy.
Mm-hmm. Chris Paul, by the way, fourth on the Thunder in usage rate this year.
Yeah. Yeah, but Paul, you know, the Thunder, again, they got all these guys who dominate the ball. They're not really high up in the league in assists. And I think Houston, if anyone knows Chris Paul's game well, that, okay, you got to force him to left. You can't let him get to that right elbow and an ISO. We got to avoid fouling. I think Houston doesn't have the greatest individual defenders, but at least they know him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Probably the easiest guy for them to scheme for with their system. And Gilgeous Alexander and Gallinari, probably a bigger problem for them. And Adams, once the shot goes up.
So it used to be that food delivery was basically pizza, maybe your local Chinese place. Definitely no longer the case now with DoorDash. So many restaurants in your community are on DoorDash now. It's the app that brings you the food you're craving right now, right to your door. You open the DoorDash app, you choose what you want to eat, and your food will be left safely outside your door with their new contactless delivery drop-off setting. They have over 300,000 partners in the U.S., Puerto Rico, Canada, and Australia. You can support your local go-tos, or you can choose from national favorites like Chipotle, Wendy's, and Cheesecake Factory. And once again, those DoorDash deliveries are all contactless now. Keep communities we operate in safe, but you get a little notification on your phone when it's been delivered, so you can go out and grab it as soon as the Dasher has left. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter the code LOCKEDONNBA, the name of this network. That's $5 off and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code LOCKEDONNBA. Once more, code LOCKEDONNBA for $5 off your first order of $15 or more at DoorDash. Star player with the easiest matchup in the first round.
How about Joel Embiid?
Yes. This is actually one of the matchups that I was talking about, but it seems like it's going to be Joel Embiid against Brad Stevens more than against any individual player.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, the guy starting against him, Daniel Tice, has a high foul rate, which when combined with all the fouls that Joel Embiid draws, makes you think that he won't be sticking around very long. So we start getting into Enes Kanter, Robert Williams, and, you know, maybe Grant Williams, maybe a lot of grab bag, different stuff that Brad Stevens pulls out here.
So this was my idea. How about you just go to close games with your five best players who are all smalls, because you're going to have to double team anyway. So who cares if you have a small guy guarding Embiid? If it's Tice, like, you have to put two on the ball regardless. So what does it matter whether it's Tice or Jaylen Brown guarding Embiid, and then you can at least get the advantage on the other end of spacing Embiid out, which you wouldn't necessarily have with one of their traditional centers.
I think it's worth a shot. The thing you always worry about trying to play like that is, does Embiid just walk into the smile, turn around, and, you know, they throw him the ball there, and like, okay, you double teamed him, but he's already dunking on you, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, and, I mean, this is one thing actually I think is going to be huge for Boston is getting pressure on the passer to get it into the posts against B. Don't let them throw those easy lobs over the top, those easy duck-ins. Force them to like throw it to Embiid 15 feet from the basket so you can load your defense up.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. They'll have to be smart about that. And it's kind of counterintuitive because Philadelphia isn't a team where you think, oh, we got to put all this pressure on the perimeter, right? But you kind of do to take away those entry passes.
Yeah. And if you want to challenge those guys to drive by you, that's not really Philly's strength. But that said, I mean, I do expect Embiid to have a pretty huge series. And I mean, do you think they even go a single possession without double teaming him?
I could see them playing straight up in the first quarter of game one just to see how it goes.
Yeah. Yeah. You're probably right about that.
Coaches are pretty conservative in game ones, you know? They kind of, and a lot of them, I think, have an idea of what they're going to do, but they just want to see the baseline first.
Maybe psychologically, because we've almost like started a whole new season. We saw this with Spoelstra and switching up his starting lineup.
Yeah.
That you don't almost have these sunk costs of, oh, we got to dance with Hubrunga. This is entire regular season. You know, Myers Leonard has earned all this equity starting all year because it's starting anew and it's just been so variable in the bubble. Maybe that will anchor coaches a little less to what they had done previously.
You would hope so, because that's always been a frustrating thing in the postseason. Like, well, why did you wait till game four? Like, we knew this was a problem going in. So, you would hope that that's something we see in these series.
Another player who has a preposterously easy matchup is LeBron James.
Okay. So that was the next guy on my list. What about Super Mario, Nate?
Super Mario. You're giving away the New Jersey roots right there by pronouncing it Mario. That's how my grandfather used to pronounce it.
Well, not feeling the Blazers defensive juggernaut against big wings.
Well, LeBron's 80-pound weight advantage over Wenyan Gabriel could help him a little bit.
Yeah, I do wonder how much they'll post him up versus how much perimeter they'll have him doing.
Yeah, that's true. He doesn't really seem to want to post up.
Yeah, yeah.
But I really, and it's the way they are designed makes it tougher, because when you have a bunch of perimeter guys who can't dribble, someone has to like get him into position.
Yeah.
To actually, now he could just, you know, clear the side out and back down. You know,
yeah, we
could
see the old also. Magic Johnson post up. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, even in pick and roll as well, like, are they, if Zach Collins can even play, are they gonna, if they put Gabriel or Collins on him, they can just run a pick and roll. They're not gonna be able to get over the screen. And I'm sure they'll try to go under or whatever. Trent is too small. Carmelo actually is like played well against LeBron historically, even defensively, more than you would expect. But, we're talking about history, not 35-year-old Carmelo.
Yeah, I think Carmelo's going to end up guarding him, though.
I mean, maybe it's just because he's LeBron's friend. LeBron's not.
No,
gonna
I mean, just
like,
in terms of
goal.
In terms of the size.
Yeah.
Like who else on Portland can do? I mean, Zach Collins may like. I don't really think so. Like,
no, it's just don't even bother going through the permutations. it just gets even worse. Kawhi Leonard also has a fantastically easy matchup, I think.
He does. They'll probably put Hardaway on him, I guess. They've used Hardaway to guard top opposing wings this year, which is like not great. And
yeah, I mean, Finney Smith is the other option.
Finney Smith, and then will they go to Kidd Gilchrist at all?
I don't think so, because it just completely subverts the theory of their offense.
Yeah, that's the issue, right? It just nukes you so bad offensively that it's, you know, other than end of quarters last shot, it's probably not worth it.
So Kleba, I think, actually can be decent against Kawhi and ISO. Although, I mean, I don't know about you. I think Kawhi looks awesome right now. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, and I think the Clippers in general, even with, you know, missing guys and trying to get back into their groove or whatever, I think they've generally looked really good, especially when any of their like best 10 players have played.
Yeah, Paul George looks way better to me as well. and they've gotten plenty of rest. Those guys are going to be ready to play a lot of minutes.
Zubats has played really well. Reggie Jackson looks good. Morris is probably the one guy you'd have some questions about.
Yeah, I thought he started to round into form a little bit, but he got a late start due to what is likely a COVID-19 diagnosis. I don't think it ever was officially confirmed. So, but yeah, I mean, none of those guys, I think, are going to be able to do anything against Kawhi. And then the other problem is, all right, you're going to put your DFS or Kleba on Kawhi, then who's going to guard Paul George now as well? Maybe if you're going to play Kleba and Porzingis and DFS together, then you're probably going to be at a little bit less firepower offensively. I don't know how many minutes Kleba can play and stay out of foul trouble. And I think if I'm Dallas, I'm just going to kind of, maybe I'll double team a lot because the Clippers aren't an amazing passing team. They don't necessarily want to take a ton of threes. So maybe that's it, your option, and just hope to outscore them. I think that you really got to just go with your best offensive groups to me if you're Rick Carlisle.
Yeah, I mean, he's a little bit of a master of junking up the game with stuff like that. And, you know, all of a sudden he has four guards in the game and you're like, how is this working? And but somehow it does with him. So I see. I agree with you, though. I think Kawhi on paper, I mean, Kawhi has a very favorable matchup.
What's our next category here?
Best coaching matchup.
Ah, apropos that we're talking about the Clippers-Mavs series in that case.
I would say so. I mean, Rick Carlisle has a pretty deep bag of tricks. I think Doc Rivers is underrated in a lot of respects, but I mean, he's always been able to make adjustments in games and get personnel that suits what they're trying to do on the floor. So to me, that's an interesting one. It would be more interesting if they had a little more comparable talent-wise on each team. I think Clippers are just too good for them is the problem. So there's not as much like X's and O's, you know, kind of stuff to really nerd out on because of that.
So this is actually a higher number than I thought. According to Synergy, the Mavs played zone defense 5.2% of the time this year. I think that's something that they should consider doing more of because it's a way to keep Kristaps Porzingis close to the basket where he's the most effective. Just kind of junk it up. It makes it a little bit harder to ISO. What'd you say?
And force the Clippers to pass multiple times.
Yeah. Like really, this is not a team that just pings the ball all over the place. And just to kind of junk them up, Kawhi, I think, really has like certain cues that really can make him comfortable, certain spots he likes to get to, and just make his angles of attack a little bit different. And, you know, we saw him use that to great effect back in 2011 against LeBron James and somewhat of a similar challenge here. You know, that Heat team didn't move the ball incredibly well either. They also had great perimeter stars. Now, it would be nice if you had Sean Marion and Tyson Chandler on this team defensively. They don't have that, but Porzingis maybe is a little bit similar to that as a rim protector. And if you want to say, all right, Kawhi, we're going to play zone. If you want to kind of back down over our smallest defender, like find him on the floor and shoot a 15-footer, our offense is so good that maybe we can keep up with you if all you're shooting is mid-rangers on the other end.
Yeah, totally, totally. Yeah, that's interesting. That's a great point. You're right. The zone should be a big part of what they do.
Yeah, and Carla, I'm excited to see him. This is really the first team, and I don't think they have a chance to win this series, but this is really the first team he's had with this much talent since 2011 in the playoffs. And, you know, I thought his 2011 coaching performance was one of the best we've ever seen in the playoffs.
Yeah,
and
I'm absolutely
curious to see what he can come up with here.
Yeah.
Next category, biggest coaching mismatch.
Oh, man. Why you got to be so mean like that?
I don't know. Like, why are coaches such fucking sacred cows? we criticize players all the time. Announcers criticize players all the time. But if you criticize a coach, it's like, ooh, you'd say that he got out coached. Like, you know, coaches can struggle just as much as players. Like, I don't know why coaches just like have this armor somehow that players don't have.
Well, just one time, I want to hear somebody on TV after a coach gets fired. Be like, yeah, that makes sense. He kind of sucked, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You don't hear that. When a player gets cut, you don't hear this same just belly aching. And hey, guess what? Most players who get cut don't have guaranteed money left. Pretty much every coach that gets fired has guaranteed money left. So not going to cry a river for those guys. So that said,
getting back to your question, I think after last year, Mike Malone has some questions to answer, and he's going against Quinn Snyder, who's generally been pretty good with the clipboard in playoff series. However, I'm worried that Quinn brought a knife to a gunfight.
Yeah, although maybe Malone brought like a sword to the gunfight. Like still better, but like also not a gun. both of these teams are really limited. It's hard to know without the health situation what's going to happen. But yeah, I think that's one where the Jazz have generally overperformed to me. I know they've had some struggles against Houston, and like, you know, their game three last year was a really disappointing game. But I think that they generally, when they've had a matchup that wasn't Houston or Golden State, they've won it.
Yeah.
And I don't know that the talent differential is so different here when you've got a team that has underperformed before and a team that's overperformed before in the playoffs, that maybe it makes you start to think about things. Any others that come to mind for you?
I think Philly fans would argue for Brad Stevens versus Brett Brown.
Yeah, I thought Brown actually did well in the playoffs last year. I thought he made some moves that really righted the ship for Philly after they got blown out in that game one against Toronto. And I thought Toronto was the better team in that series, and Philly really pushed them. So, you know, that's another one where his quiver just isn't as large as Brad Stevens. But
yeah,
certainly I would say Boston has the coaching advantage there. I don't know if it's a mismatch in my view.
Yeah.
How about Nick Nurse versus Jock Vaughn?
Yeah, you know, what I was going to say is anybody versus Nick Nurse. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see Jock Vaughn in a playoff series, which obviously he didn't get to do in Orlando. He had the Nets playing well in the bubble,
yes.
I think far better than anyone expected. But I think there's still some questions based on how his last tenure went.
Well, and that's not even a slam on Jock Vaughn. It's just Nick Nurse is really, really good. Yeah. And also Jock Vaughn also has a very limited number of buttons to push compared to Nick Nurse. Spoelstra versus McMillan, I would also say that he'd have a pretty big advantage in that matchup.
Just in terms of being able to, guys who have made adjustments in playoff series and done that. I mean, McMillan did a great job this year with that team, but when we're talking about lining up the chess pieces in a playoff series, that's where McMillan still has something to prove. And that goes back to his Portland days, really.
Yeah, I would say his teams have a history of underperforming. And even going back to, I guess he did win a series when he was with the Sonics, right? The 2005? Is he the coach of them then?
I believe that's correct. Yeah, yeah. And then gave San Antonio a pretty good fight in the second round. They beat Sacramento in the Jerome James series.
Oh, yeah. A series that Isaiah Thomas was watching incredibly intently. All right, we have been covering the league for a long time.
Yes, exactly, really.
Series with the most variables. I think that's pretty clearly Nuggets, Jazz, just due to all the health situations.
Yeah.
And not only the health situation, but just the number of new players and new roles and not knowing who's going to be available. So those are Michael Porter Jr. is really, you know, we thought he might not even hardly play, and now he looks like their second best player all of a sudden.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's probably the biggest one. Indiana, Miami could go that way. There's a lot of different ways Miami can line up. Indiana though is kind of static. I mean, they have what they have at this point with their four best players, and like those guys are going to play all the minutes. So there's not as many options for Indiana to change things up.
Let's do this one next. Most obvious starting lineup change.
Gary Trent for Zach Collins.
Now that's interesting. I said the most obvious starting lineup change is JaVale McGee not starting anymore for the Lakers and starting Anthony Davis at center, which I then thought would make Portland have to go with Gary Trent for Zach Collins.
Okay.
But I think one of those is going to happen. And if one happens, then the other is much more likely to happen.
I guess I had sort of priced in already that JaVale wouldn't start. We'll see how Frank Vogel lines up for game one.
The Lakers starting lineup has sucked. What do you think? You're going to start Howard, or are you just going to start AD and Kuzma?
I would start AD, Kuzma, LeBron at the 3, 4, 5. Yeah.
I would do that too, just because you're bailing Portland out by staying big. You're giving them, they've got bigs and they've got guards. And so you're bailing them out by letting them a chance, play two bigs together and also get more rim protection when your whole offense is about attacking the rim. So you really, I think you just forced the issue. Yusuf Nurkic really struggled to guard Anthony Davis in that 2018 series. And I think you want to just force that matchup again, tire out Nurkic as well, get him in foul trouble. It seems like it's so obvious. Frank Vogel doesn't seem like the proactive type in a playoff series. So we'll see. He's got some questions to answer too. You know, I think
going back
to 2016, that's why he got fired, I think, was because he kind of didn't quite manage things well enough in that, that big comeback that the Raptors had in 2016.
Yeah, absolutely. The Blazers with Trent in the lineup, though, have been so massively better. I mean, it's their only lineup with three real wing players, or three real perimeter players, excuse me.
I mean, maybe the thought would be put Gary Trent for Carmelo Anthony, but they're never going to do that.
No, and I think there's a case for, like, with Carmelo at four, they're actually really hard to guard when they play those five players.
I mean,
that is an offense, right?
Yeah, I definitely think they're closing lineup, and Carmelo, as well as he's played, and as much as Zach Collins has struggled, has changed my opinion on this. I think Carmelo should be closing over Zach Collins.
Yeah.
But any other ones that popped out to you?
Well, let's see. We talked about the Lakers one. I mean, does the Porter one, I guess, has already been made. I just don't see how Denver can start Gary Harris in this series. I mean, maybe they pull him out to play against Mitchell, but I'd even like Will Barton, maybe better at the two for them. Harris just hasn't really gotten on track this year.
Yeah. And his injury issues, his COVID-19 diagnosis, probably not helping him in that either. Harris's theoretical skill set works better to me, particularly guarding Donovan Mitchell, where I think Harris is pretty underrated guarding those smaller guards. But
yeah,
and then Barton as the main guy on the second unit, it makes more sense. And they can still jigger things around that way, even if Barton starts. But I think it's just going to depend on health, ultimately, for that one. How about...
I could see Houston...
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
I could see Houston changing things up. I actually wrote in my column for The Athletic that I could see them starting Ben McLemore. But if the traps are a problem, you could also see them turn to Austin Rivers.
Yeah, I think they're going to want to maintain as much size as possible in their starting group, particularly to guard Gallo. I think Gallo against McLemore is something that really could be a big problem for them. And McLemore is also another guy who's not exactly Mr. Dribble.
Mm-hmm. No, not at all. Not at all. But then, I mean, that's all. You're depending on Eric Gordon then, though.
Yeah, I think they're just going to have to. You think Gordon's just not going to have it? I thought he looked better before he sprained his ankle. And then in that brief cameo in that meaningless game against Philly, he's lost some weight. So I'm hopeful he'll be better.
That's an interesting swing variable right there. Not just for this series. I think for any hope of them giving the Lakers a fight in round two is what is Eric Gordon right now?
Yeah. Last one that I had. Justin Holiday replacing Aaron Holiday in the Pacers starting line.
Okay, so I speculated that Justin Holiday might finish the games, but I'm not sure if he'll start the game.
Well, what is the point of Aaron Holiday in the starting lineup? That's what I don't understand.
They kind of like him.
I think he's a good player. I like him. In fact, he will feature prominently in another potential rotation move that we'll talk about later. But I think he just having him in the starting lineup, you've got Oladipo, Warren, and Brogdon already.
Yeah,
he's not a great spot up shooter, and I think most importantly you just need someone to guard Duncan Robinson and Goran Dragic. And I think I like Oladipo on Dragic, and I think Holiday is really good at getting through screens. He could guard Duncan Robinson. He's got more size and length. I don't know who Aaron Holiday is gonna guard out there, and yeah, he's a decent pick and roll player, but you've got all these other guys you want to give the ball to over him. Like, is especially if they're switching, you're gonna go to Aaron Holiday and an ISO in his matchup. I think you'd rather just give it to your playmakers and then spread the floor.
Right. So you'd rather have Justin Holiday parked in the corner, basically.
But it's more of a defensive change than an offensive change.
That's interesting. Have him as the chase, because I thought they would have Oladipo as the chase guy on Duncan Robinson. But you're right. If you don't have Aaron Holiday out there, you can put Oladipo on Dragic instead.
Yeah, because I don't know if I like Aaron Holiday against Dragic. I think Dragic is going to really take advantage of him with his experience. He'll draw some fouls. He'll just meander in the lane and just shoot over him.
Dragic has looked good in the in the bubble. One of the guys who probably changed my thought on him versus how I felt about him in March.
Okay. Rotation players most likely to have their roles cut.
Can we get another shout out for Super Mario?
He's got to play at least a little bit, but I would recommend against Hassan Whiteside, Mario Hezonja, and Carmelo Anthony all playing together like they did in the play-in game.
Yeah, that was rough, right? The it was interesting the second half because Stotts DNP'd him and went with Wenyen Gabriel. So in terms of players who are kind of a little more renowned, I could see Gary Harris getting kind of deleted from Denver's mix. This isn't getting knocked out of the rotation entirely, but what about Al Horford moving back to a lesser role?
That's going to be fascinating in that series. Who is he going to guard? I guess they'll put him on Jaylen Brown to start.
That's what they'd have to do. But the thing is, like, when Boston goes to their bench and starts putting in these bad players, like, those are, like, that's when you can play Horford and Embiid together if, like, Grant Williams is one of the guys out there, right? Or Wanamaker or whatever. Like, there are ample opportunities to hide Horford, or not even hide. I mean, he's a good defender. Don't want him on these all-star guards on Boston, though. There are so many opportunities once the Celtics go into their bench, and it's almost like Brett Brown has to scheme for what Boston's substitutions will be to really maximize his Horford minutes.
Yeah, that's an interesting point there. And, I mean, I guess starting and closing games, Brown, they stagger guys more than just about anyone. I mean, basically, when your best player in B goes out with 5 minutes gone by in the first and third quarters, as a general rule, it kind of doesn't matter as much who you're starting because you're basically going to your bench unit anyway at that point. So maybe it doesn't matter as much eventually. But I mean, I think if they're going to win this series, to me, I think they got to just go all in on defense and just hope that Embiid can carry them enough offensively. And I think Horford has to be part of that. But yeah, that's a question. If Jaylen Brown starts cooking him, then they got problems.
Because the other thing is, if Horford's guarding Jaylen Brown, that means Tobias Harris is guarding Gordon Hayward, right?
Yeah.
That's suboptimal.
Okay, here's one for me.
Okay.
In that same series, Robert Williams has actually been playing. Maybe you can play him when Embiid's not in the game, but if Embiid's going to play 40 minutes, Robert Williams will be limited to 8 minutes a game.
I think they're going to play Kanter against Embiid. I don't think it's going to be Robert Williams.
And certainly these reserve Boston perimeter guys, I think they're going to get every possible minute out of their five good perimeter guys. Now, Walker, a little concerned about whether they say he's not going to have any minutes restrictions, but I don't think Brad Stevens wants to play him 40 minutes a game every game.
No, we're going to end up seeing some Wanamaker in particular. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But maybe the perimeter guys beyond that, we'll probably see some semi-Ojale. But they do have some holes there. I think they're going to try and avoid playing those guys as much as possible.
Another rotation guy who I think we might not see, Nerlens Noel.
Yeah, that one occurred to me, but it's just who the hell else do they have? They don't have anyone else.
Baisley?
So you think he's going to be the backup center?
They'll play Gallinari at five.
Yeah, I mean, that's not a lot of rim protection, but I guess if you're going to say, to me, that's, they've played with the center basically this entire season.
Yeah.
Having to totally change up how you play. If this whole double teaming, pseudo triangle and two that we talked about isn't tried or doesn't work, then yeah, I think you're probably right. But I think Noel back on the back line protecting the rim. Also, they can play him whenever Harden's out of the game too.
That's true. If they really try to match up the minutes, I mean, Adams is probably going to be out of the game longer than Harden is, but yeah.
Yeah, that's in that same series, though, anyone who can't shoot on the Thunder.
So, like, half their team?
Because,
They're going to dare Dort to make shots, certainly.
Yeah, if he even is available.
Yeah. Anytime one of these guys like Baisley or, Nader or Roberson, who's back for them, all those guys, they're just going to dare Ferguson. Them to fire away. Yeah.
Well, and that's what Houston does. They don't have much rim protection, but they've historically done a great job of helping off the guy who can't shoot and really making that guy beat them. And So I actually think that Nader has looked awesome shooting the ball in the bubble. He's really worked on his shot, and I guess that's actually become a plus for him.
Okay.
And if you're doing a bunch of double teaming, you don't have to worry about him getting taken advantage of as much by Harden defensively. So he might actually be the best option there, because you have to spread the floor for your guys to go in these ISOs against Houston. If they can just pack the paint against you, you're not going to be able to score against them. Anyone else stick out to you, a potential rotation player who might get their minutes cut?
Does Emmanuel Mudiay count?
Yeah, I think they should avoid playing him.
Yeah.
I think there are many other players who...
That ship probably sailed. It seems like Mieoni might get some of those minutes now.
TJ McConnell is the guy for me who... I think McMillan's a little more stuck in his ways, but McConnell lost minutes last year in the playoffs. I've talked before about how he McConnellizes the game on offense.
Yeah.
And he just has to have the ball, because if he doesn't, he's not being guarded. And he does give them something pushing the pace, but particularly the combination of he and Oladipo on the second unit, I think, is a really bad fit. And that's why I think Holiday would be a much better fit on that second unit, who can shoot it, whereas McConnell just can't. And Miami has a lot of size and length that can make things difficult for him as well. And yeah, McConnell did really change the series in Philly's favor somewhat in 2018. But last year, it was clear that that's just because they didn't have enough good players in that series. So last year, it was clear that if you focus in on him and don't guard him, and you don't give up kind of some of the dumb transition plays, or like, you know, just forget to guard him while he gnashes under the basket and then shoots a mid-ranger, or overhelp on him too much. Like, his game is very limited, and if you really focus in on the scouting report, it can be neutralized fairly easily.
Yeah. And then you're basically going then with, if you start Justin Holiday, then you bring Aaron Holiday and McDermott off the bench as your backups at the 1-4 spot, and that probably gets you through the game, and you don't need to go to McConnell.
Any others you got? I got one more.
Yeah, fire away.
Vucevic Zubac. I think he's been underrated. I think he's going to play a big role in a potential Lakers series, but it's going to be too difficult for him to just have to guard a shooter all the time. I think if I were Doc Rivers, I would try not to start him and then try and get some minutes with him when Luka's on the bench, because, you know, Porzingis, Kleba, or if they do this thing you were talking about with putting Kawhi on Porzingis so they can switch the Luka-Porzingis pick and roll, then where is Zubac going to guard? There's just too many capable shooters on this Mavs team, and I think it's going to be much more about mobility, keeping them out of the paint to begin with, than having that secondary rim protection for the Clippers in this series.
Yeah, that one might have game two adjustment written all over it. You know, especially once Montrezl Harrell gets some of his wind, who's you know, maybe a little more capable of playing in space. Jamichael Green, maybe.
Yeah, I like Harrell's matchup attacking on some of those face-ups against Porzingis too. I think he can take advantage of it and maybe draw some fouls with his quickness.
Yeah, we'll have to see what kind of shape he's in too.
Yep, and even Jamichael Green at center too. I like the idea for the Clippers on offense. I think they're better both offensively and defensively without Zubac out there in this particular matchup, because then you can also force Porzingis to guard a shooter, which he is extremely uncomfortable doing. All right, we got about 10 minutes left here.
Okay.
Deep rotation players who could emerge.
I think we're certainly going to see more of Wenyen Gabriel.
Yeah, more likely than not, he starts, right?
I don't know if he's going to... I still can't... I think they got to start Trent, right? But I could see him playing, especially if they get fouls. I could see him playing some significant minutes. We'll see. You know, this is kind of a deep cut, but I mean, Jakar Sampson is going to be the backup five for Indiana in this series.
Seems like it. Bitadze has not looked good in his return from a knee injury.
No, he's not ready at either end. I think Utah will see somebody. You're going to see somebody you haven't seen before out there for Utah, especially these first couple games with Conley out. And I don't know if it's going to be Mieoni or Rajon Tucker, but I think
Jarrell Brantley, Jarrell Brantley,
or Jarrell Brantley, or Jarrell Brantley. But you're going to see a different face out there.
Who's Utah going to start? Going to start Clarkson or Niang?
I think
one of these other guys.
I think the thing you do without Conley is you try to hide Niang in the starting lineup, and then at least you have a little bit more size out there, and then you keep Clarkson in the same role. I think that's what you do.
Yeah, I think Niang can give you a little more size against Millsap, hopefully, because they may try to go into the post to Millsap. And in that Portland series, Millsap really had a nice advantage. Like, he can still score down there.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned Nader already. I mean, like, how desperate is Stotts going to get? Like, could Nasir Little get dusted off? Wow. Possibly. He has some size. Maybe, particularly if they're down, you know, 2-0 and getting killed. They was like, well, let's at least give this guy some experience and maybe it'll work.
Yeah.
Against LeBron. Good luck.
Wow. What about like one of these random Boston guys? Could we say Javonte Green?
Yeah, I'm not sure what series it is that you need just more small wings, though. I like Javonte Green at times. But he also takes, as a non-shooter, he kind of takes away from the theory of what they're trying to do offensively.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we mentioned this being a Cantor series for Boston already.
Alec Burks? Could he close games for Philly, potentially?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I think so. And I think he's looked good here. I mean, certainly he's looked better than Milton. I think there's a decent chance he's closing games, absolutely. But they need some, you know, some off-the-dribble juice. I could see Burks and Tybalt both closing, actually.
Okay, next category here. The best defense in the playoffs. So this is not the best regular season defense. This is just, what is the best defensive team in the playoffs?
It's got to be Toronto.
Over Milwaukee. One of the greatest regular season defenses of all time.
I just think so much of what Milwaukee does is scheme-based. And to me, Toronto, their advantage is much more matchup-based in terms of they're so solid at every spot that there's just no advantage where you're like, oh, yeah, we can take that. You know, probably your best bet is when Mark Gasol has a real speed matchup, like Kemba Walker's a little bit of a problem for him, you know, that and put him in pick and rolls like that. But even that, I mean, he's really sound in pick and roll and smart and knows, you know, doesn't get duped by dummy action. And then when they go to Ibaka, they're probably a little more vulnerable, but they're just tough. I mean, their guards are so strong that even though they're short, you can't really take advantage of it. Ananobi's really good on the ball. So is Siakam. It's just hard to get an advantage against that team.
I completely agree with you. I mean, they were last year one of the greatest playoff defenses, and they did lose Danny Green and Kawhi, but they got OG Ananobi back. And OG, to me, he might be able to play at a higher level than Kawhi did last year. Because Kawhi, he did okay on Giannis, but he was pretty slow otherwise. I mean, Ananobi, I've talked about him as I think he might be the best ISO defender in the league, regardless of position.
Right.
And yeah, they've just got a ton of length. They got a ton of effort. They're all fresh right now. They have so much versatility, both from a coaching standpoint and just the number of weapons that they can throw at you, the number of ways they can play. It's, I would actually put Toronto first as well. I mean, the Bucks, they are so good statistically and just, they, unless you have the horses to get them out of that base defense, just the math doesn't work for you.
Yeah.
But there are some teams, maybe a Boston that might be able to do that. Maybe the Clippers will be able to do that. So the Bucks would be my number two. There's a lot of really good defensive teams. Like Miami looks awesome right now. The Lakers are always really good. Clippers have great personnel. Like this is, a lot of these teams are defensive teams that we expect to be going deep into the playoffs.
Yeah. We could see some scores go down a little from what we saw, toward the end of the bubble games.
Best playoff offense.
I think Portland with their five best players out there is, with Lillard playing like this, is freaking lethal.
Yeah, that is a good one. For unfortunately, they would be at the bottom of the best playoff defense category.
Yeah, if there was a DH rule in basketball, but like you could do it for your whole team.
So basically the Wizards approach this season.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they're like the Wizards, but if they were a playoff team.
Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately, they do not play in the American Basketball League. I think two teams came to mind for me, though, among the teams that are going to go deep. I do think Portland, they don't have a ton of diversity of threats, which I think ends up being important.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, the Mavs were the greatest offense of all time, just in terms of raw points per possession this year.
Yeah.
Like, they got to be talked about, but, again, neither of those teams are favorites to make it out of the first round. Of the teams that I expect to advance into the Final Eight, I think the Celtics and the Clippers are the two that point out to me.
See, I was going to say Boston, but they're so bad when those bench guys come in that it loses some of the luster. But yeah. I mean, to have four perimeter weapons that are oh shit matchups for an opposing defense, like, I mean, that's hard to deal with in a playoff game where you know you got to put up with all four of them for 35 to 40 minutes. I mean, that's a challenge. I think they're getting a little bit of short shrift heading into this as far as how good they are and how much of a threat they can be deep in the playoff.
Yeah, they don't have that one guy who's that awesome. We'll see if Jason Tatum can establish himself at that level this year. But the Clippers, particularly in just a playoff style of basketball, just the number of weapons they have, they're another one where you don't have enough guys to guard all the players that they have.
At first, I wrote down the Clippers, but if you can make them have to throw multiple passes, I think they can break down.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see, and it'll be also interesting to see what the personnel is for them at the end of games. Okay, do we need to do... Let's do playoff predictions here.
Sure.
We'll just run through the whole thing. Toronto, Brooklyn.
Raptors in five. Canadian law, they have to lose game one, so...
I'm actually going Raptors in four.
Okay.
In that one. Bucks, Magic?
Bucks in four.
Same thing. Celtics, Sixers?
Celtics in six.
All right, I have the same thing as well. All right, so our only difference so far is I feel good about it. The way I thought about that Raptors in four versus Raptors in five pick was, will I feel stupider if I pick five and it's four or if I pick four and it's five? And I was definitely like, I will feel stupider if I pick five and it's four. So that's why I went with four, ultimately.
Okay.
Pacers Heat.
I have Miami in six.
All right, I have the Heat in five. I think that I'm really impressed with their defense right now. I think this is a bad matchup for India. Western Conference.
All right.
Blazers, Lakers.
Lakers in five.
Same as me. Clips, Mavs.
I went Clippers in six.
Yeah, me too. Although if I had to pick a direction that's going to go, I'd be more likely to say fewer.
Five was on the table and seven was not when I made that prediction. Yeah, totally.
Nuggets, Jazz.
I had Denver in six.
I'm going with the Utah Jazz in seven games.
Wow. Even with no Bogey, no Conley for a couple games. Okay.
There's that's a lot bold. Of uncertainty. That's a bet on the coaching matchup.
Okay.
In large part. And, you know, I think it was between Nuggets in seven and Jazz in seven. And I just was like, I'm just more of a believer in what the Jazz do than the Nuggets do in the end. But that's almost more of like a protest vote. I don't know if I really believe it, but like ESPN, only one of their 16 experts picks the Jazz to win the series. And I was like, it's not crazy that the Jazz could win this.
Yeah.
At all.
Yeah.
Thunder, Rockets.
I had Houston in seven.
All right. I had the Rockets in six.
Yeah.
More of a believer in the Rockets here. So we just talked about the first round. Who is the MVP of just the first round of the playoffs to you?
MVP of the first round. I mean, are we allowed to say Giannis, right? When he averages 30 and 10 in 18 minutes a game as the Bucks win in four.
To me, my view of MVP, especially because it's kind of funny, the more games you play, like the more value you're providing in theory.
Yeah.
He'll probably have the best statistical per minute production, I would guess.
I'll go James Harden.
That's my pick too. Yeah. Lillard and Doncic in a losing cause certainly could be up there as well. Okay. Second round in the East. This is a big one here.
Okay.
Celtics, Raptors.
I like Boston. I haven't mapped out how many games, but I like Boston in that matchup.
I do as well. I want the Celtics in six for that. And then Bucks, Heat?
Milwaukee, probably like five.
Yeah, that was my thought as well. Although if I had to pick a way for that to go, I'd say more games rather than fewer. I do think Miami can do some things that could cause the Bucks some problems.
I don't think Miami will score a basket against them.
That's what I thought as well, particularly if you just take away Duncan Robinson.
Yeah.
Put Eric Bledsoe on him and then everything else, just barricade the rim and Jimmy Butler, shoot as many mid-rangers as you want.
Exactly.
West, Lakers, okay. Rockets.
That gets interesting, right? Probably, can we say Russ is maybe back then?
That's the hope.
I think it goes six or seven, but I do think the Lakers end up winning.
Yeah, I would have it in seven. I mean, that's probably my second round prediction that's most subject to change based on what happens in the first round.
I'd agree with that for sure. Yeah.
Clippers Nuggets.
Yeah, I saw Clippers and Nuggets play in person right before the shutdown. Watched them play again, the other day.
Well, you'll have four more chances to watch them play.
It's not a good matchup for Denver, man. It is not. Yeah. It is not. I think, with the home music advantage, maybe they can get to five.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would probably be, no matter who the Clippers play, it won't be more than five. And I very possibly will end up picking a sweep in that one. Lakers-Clippers.
Clippers and six. I think it's just a good matchup for the Clippers. I think they're really well built to play against the Lakers.
The way I put it with Danny was I would pick Clippers and six also, but I might give the Lakers a larger percentage chance of winning the series than that Clippers and six pick would indicate, just because LeBron might just be playing at that type of level. Like, if he's the best player, then all bets are off.
Mm-hmm.
East? This would be Bucks-Celtics?
Bucks-Celtics. We both have Bucks-Celtics. I think it's Bucks in five. I think as good as the matchup with Toronto is for Boston, it's that bad against Milwaukee. I think Toronto could give Milwaukee a better series than Boston can. Boston has
certainly on the defensive end.
Boston has nobody who matches up with Giannis, and it just, like, the whole edifice crumbles because of that.
Yeah, I think Boston might be the team that has the best personnel to match up offensively against the Bucks defense. But if you can't stop Giannis, you're kind of, I think you're in trouble against Milwaukee. Because I do think the Bucks can be vulnerable on their offensive end, but Boston just doesn't have
the size and strength.
NBA Finals, Clippers versus Bucks.
You know, I've been saying Bucks all year. I think you'd have to say from the beginning of the playoff season till the end that they have the greatest percentage chance of winning four series in a row and being the champion. But if you get to the point where you're down to one series and it's Clippers versus Bucks, I'm not sure that's still true.
Yeah, I'm in complete agreement with you there.
So if my default has been Bucks all year, I want to see how they look, especially in the second and third rounds. But I just worry that the Clippers are able to wall up against Giannis, and that their depth of options can wear down what Milwaukee does a little bit. I think that's really interesting. I think it's like a seven gamer either way. I'm gonna stick with my default of Bucks, and then if I change it later, I change it later. But it's that. I mean, I hope that's the finals. That'd be a great series.
Yeah, I like the Clippers matching up against the Bucks defense with some of the shooting that they have. I mean, we've seen that the Bucks don't have an answer for Kawhi. We saw it last year, and to me, Kawhi looks even better now than he did last year. So I think he'll be the difference maker in the end. And Paul George is also not really a great matchup for the Bucks defensively, with his ability to shoot coming off of screens, which kind of breaks the Bucks defense a little bit. And so I would go with Clippers in seven, but I do agree with you that if there were one team I would place a bet on to win the NBA Finals right now, it would be the Bucks, just because of their easier path to the Finals.
Absolutely.
Who will be the MVP of the playoffs?
Well, I mean, I think we've made it pretty clear that it's either Kawhi or Giannis, right?
Yep. I mean, LeBron will be heard from, you would think.
Yeah.
It's got to be between those three guys to me. And well, I mean, unless James Harden is just
good. If Houston beats the Lakers, right, then you have a case for James Harden.
Although I really don't like that Clippers matchup for Houston, though.
Oh, the Rockets are roadkill against the Clippers. Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, Kawhi would probably be my pick over Giannis. But it could be any of these. There's a lot of uncertainty. Who will be the rookie of the playoffs? Not a lot of potential options here with Ja Morant not making it.
Yeah. What do we got here? Like Tyler Hero?
I think to me, I'll throw you out some of the ones. Porter Jr., Tyler Hero, Thybul. Then you're down to like Lou Dort, Darius Bazley, Grant Williams territory. So it's probably between MPJ, Hero, and Thybul.
So I'd forgotten that Porter was still technically a rookie. So I would say Porter.
Yeah, he's going to start. I mean, probably more likely than not, he's going to average at least high teens.
Yeah.
And I mean, none of these other guys are going to start. I guess Brett Brown said he was looking at maybe starting Thybul, but no, it's got to be Porter Jr. Coach of the playoffs? probably Doc Rivers in my view if I have the Clippers winning it.
You'd probably have to say that. I was going to say, if your round one prediction comes true, I think Quinn Snyder will get some votes.
Yeah. I do have one more I want to throw at you here. I know we're okay. Running low on time, but which team, I mean, we have the same final four of the two LA teams, Boston and Milwaukee. What team outside of those four is most likely to crash the conference finals party?
So I think you're definitely looking at either Houston or Toronto.
Yeah.
And, you know, who is more likely than the other? Toronto, the thing with Toronto, they're certainly in the second round where Houston is not. So I think I'd have to say Toronto.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think the Lakers are still better than Boston in my mind. Houston has a little tougher of an advantage. And also Toronto is healthy right now and Houston isn't. Although I think Houston at full strength is better than Toronto, but they don't play in the East. All right. This is going to be awesome. So we'll be back. We'll keep you posted. Probably record on Monday next week, I would imagine, to wrap up all the playoff action. You can catch Dunked On, where we go into even more depth on all of these series. We spent at least 20 minutes on each series over the last three episodes or so. So you can check that out. John, you're going to be, what do you think you're going to write about for The Athletic as these playoff series are?
Well, so obviously I've written previews with my picks for both the Eastern and Western Conference first round. I'm actually writing about the draft this week too. The deadline is Monday for players to submit their name. Even the ones who decide to go back to school, they can change their mind up until tomorrow. So that's sort of the final call, so to speak.
Dude, aren't we 4 days away from the lottery?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Or did they move it to the 25th?
It's the 20th. Yeah. So we got a busy week here. So I mean, I'll be writing about what I see, you know, in these playoff games. So we'll see where that goes. And of course, we'll be voting our first round Rising Stars team.
The world team. It's going to be a tough
the world team. Rising Stars team. It's really a shame Nicolò Melli did not make the postseason.
Oh man. All right. Well, yeah, this is going to be awesome. We're going to have four games a day for the next 2 weeks. Can't wait. And we'll talk to y'all next week.